Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. Thank you for joining us today for this special Thanksgiving week series where we're talking about leadership transition in the nonprofit sector. Before I introduce my guest, I want to share an update about our traveling road show. This year, we are extremely grateful for our partners in Toronto, Raleigh, Central Massachusetts, Philadelphia, New York City, and Detroit. Each of these locations afforded us ideal training spaces. They were fantastic hosts and the opportunity to share the vision of responsive fundraising. In 2020, mark my words, we will be hosting 12 stops on the Responsive Fundraising Roadshow, all in partnership with local organizations who share our vision for a more thoughtful, holistic, and sustainable approach to fundraising. If your organization would like to partner with us in 2020, we would love to hear from you. There is no cost to host the Responsive Fundraising Seminar. In fact, we will reimburse any expense your organization incurs, and we will provide your board with a complimentary board training while we are in town. Being a host of the Responsive Fundraising Seminar is a great opportunity to demonstrate to your nonprofit community that your organization is thinking big picture, long term, and wants to ensure that your organization is a place where fundraising can thrive. If you'd like more information, please don't hesitate to reach out to me at any time. Hi, Paige. Thank you for being my guest today on the Fundraising Talent Podcast. This week, we're having a conversation about leadership transition and how the nonprofit sector can better navigate the changes between several generations that are in the workforce today. But before we do that, Paige, would you mind just introducing yourself to our listeners?
Hi there. I'm Paige Eubanks-Barrow. I'm the head of donor relations and communications at the LSU Health Foundation in New Orleans. I live with one foot in New Orleans and one foot in Baton Rouge. I come with about 20 years of development fundraising experience in all kinds of roles. Have lived in Pennsylvania, working with Carnegie Mellon in Stillwater, Oklahoma, working for Oklahoma State University and a few other places in between. And I am firmly Gen X.
So, Paige, that's interesting. I didn't catch that detail that you had raised money here in Pennsylvania. So let's do a little bit of an interesting sort of comparison because I'm here in Pennsylvania. What's different about raising money in New Orleans different than, say, raising money in Pittsburgh?
Oh,
is there anything distinctively
that's a really
different?
Good question. Oh.
I would have never thought, yes. I'm just totally shooting from the hip here, but I would have never made a comparison, but I'm going to do it today. Is there anything similar or different between raising money in Pittsburgh versus raising money in New Orleans?
So raising money in New Orleans is where I'll go with that because I've done both, of course, but I've mentioned in the past that New Orleans is still very much an event-based fundraising area, kind of like Dallas is as well.
Yeah.
And it isn't necessarily about bringing in $100,000, $500,000, or $1 million, even though we do have larger organizations that do that here. It's really very much about the relationships because New Orleans is a small town in a big city, and you'll find that's very common on the Gulf Coast. I'm born and raised in Alabama from Mobile, but we have a social calendar that is our Bible here in New Orleans when it comes to scheduling our events, our engagement events, and that's just a really, really, really big deal for people, especially people that you're asking for money from because they want to know that you are committed to the community. Too. So you would never, 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 never schedule one thing over the other. Whereas in Pittsburgh, my experience was that, you know, people went where they wanted to and there was such diverse interest and people were from all over the place, especially with the with Carnegie Mellon being there and Pitt being there and then six or seven other smaller colleges right there in the Pittsburgh area. And then all the startup nonprofits and the new money, it is very different. I think they're coming closer together, but different experiences, but both wonderful.
So you would definitely say, and I can appreciate your growing up in Mobile as well, that you would definitely say that where you're at now compared to, say, Pittsburgh, I mean, is there a does the appreciation for, say, the events really sort of rooted in sort of the tradition and sort of the calendar? And I almost have to think about the Mardi Gras tradition that sort of links to the Catholic Church and all that stuff. Am I putting it all together correctly?
You're right there. You're right there. There is a 6-week period during Lent where all the fundraising is done in Louisiana. And there's nothing, you know, I say that tongue in cheek, but, you know, we laugh about it. We call ourselves kind of the Lazy River fundraising. We kind of hang through the whole year. We socialize, and then you actually work when everyone in the city is down to business. And that typically happens between Mardi Gras, but then you have, not carnival season. What do we call it? We call it festival season. So everybody knows about Jazz Fest, but there are about 100 other fests that are named after streets and foods. And it's just 1 year long celebration of culture. So yes, there are some sacred cows that you don't want to sacrifice by accident. So,
Well, we agreed to talk about something completely different, but I could definitely see you coming back and having a conversation about tradition and fundraising and its relationship to all that. We could have a lot of fun with that. So we'll pick that up after the new year. But the conversation that we're talking about today is this transition between multiple generations. And I want to clarify that, and I haven't pointed this out with my previous guest this week, but somebody told me recently that there's actually 5 generations in the workplace. I wouldn't even know how to characterize them all, but that there's 5 generations.
Can you tell me what they are? Because I need to write them down.
Yeah, I don't even know what they are. Somebody said that. It was like, okay, I just thought that it was me, you and me, and the weird, awkward Gen Xers that are sort of behind, in between these two big, huge boomers and millennials. But somebody else said, no, there's more too. But anyway, what's your general take on the issue? What's your general take on this? What's the nonprofit sector's awareness level? What's your spin on it?
Oh, so, you know, I see it. So I will say, you know, of course, this is going to be colored by my own experience, which is why I'm grateful for this podcast, because, you know, I didn't go out and read half a dozen books before being brave enough to go on the air with you. But I've seen some really positive reactions. So I think a little bit about one of the places that I left in the last 4 years, where my interview with that individual or with that university was wonderful. And I remember him asking me as he was looking at my resume, and he was firmly boomer generation, and asked me how long was I going to be there, because my previous position, I was there for 3.5 years. And, you know, I think about my career path, and I think about how many times I've had to give myself a raise and being brave and taking the next opportunity, even if it means picking up my family and doing the thing that most people are not willing to do, which is just move across the country for an opportunity. And it was a very fair question, because his concern was, you know, in 3.5 years, Paige, are you going to pick up and move on to the next thing? And my mind went immediately to, and I can't believe it came out of my mouth, but it did, you know, well, are you going to be here in 3.5 years? Because I'm thinking I'm not going to take a job with somebody who is going to be here and then leave and retire immediately. And I, you know, I don't recall which way he took it. I know he took it well, because I landed the job and it was a great almost 5-year experience. But I see him now, and I see him taking a step out of planning his exit very well. And I know they're in the interview process right now for someone who will lead that foundation. And I know they're taking into consideration the culture, who is going to thrive in that workplace environment, being in a small city, but being a huge university. And I see them doing it well. I see them coaching people along. There are other organizations that maybe aren't doing such a great job. But I have a lot of hope in the people who are stepping into leadership now. And, you know, I think in terms of myself, which is my only direct experience, is that I'm keeping an eye on people as they are making their exit. And I'm learning as much as I possibly can from them, and taking their feedback as much as I can in terms of, you know, how do I work with people who might not be able to interpret my Gen X response to a, I don't even know, is boomer a bad word these days? Because I feel like I've seen so many memes. But you know what I mean. So with the, you know, I've learned a lot of lessons that way, and I've been grateful for their patience. And it's made me see how I can bring the generations behind along with me, and we're learning together how to, you know, be prepared for that transition and retain those relationships in an authentic way as people are graduating from the workplace for whatever reason that may be. So my experience has been hopeful. So, you know, but I'm in higher ed, I'm in medical, higher ed. So, you know, I see that quite often, and I see it with my peers, but outside of that, I couldn't, you know, tell you exactly what's going on with necessarily the American Cancer Society or with United Way or other places like that.
So I really like your use of the term graduation. Do you use that deliberately?
Yes. I did today because I've been thinking about it, you know.
Well, think about that. I'm going to totally steal your show here. Graduation is a better use because in the outline, we've been using the word retiring. Mm-hmm. But retiring, doesn't it imply sort of like you're done? But graduation sort of suggests, okay, you've done this particular phase. You've achieved this particular sort of benchmark in life, and you're going to go on to something greater. Isn't that
right? Right. Well, I think about it in terms of how I want to be considered when it's my turn. Is I want it to be a celebration of the work that I've done. I want it to be on my terms. Of course, I want to leave whatever organization I'm with at the time in very good shape. But, you know, I want to be remembered for doing really good work. And part of that is, you know, leaving them, you know, wishing you weren't going, but grateful you prepared them for that. And I try to view all of my employment experiences, especially with people that I'm hiring, and I'm trying to work them up through the ladder to their next step. And that's another lesson that I learned from this gentleman who is in the process now of retiring and graduating. This just made me much more mindful of that. But yes, take it. I give that to you. That's my gift.
Thank you. That's sharp. That's really good. You scored the winning word of the day. That's pretty good. That's the graduating generation. But what about the younger generation? I've been asking people. Okay, so I routinely sit in the room somewhere or another, whether I'm doing interviews or speaking at an event or something, and there's a 26 to a 28-year-old. Oftentimes, she's a young woman. Mm-hmm. She's got got an MBA, and she is ready to take on the world, right? She thinks that she can run any shop in town. What's your advice to her?
Let her try.
Okay. That's good. I like that.
Don't rain on her parade. I mean, there's a lot of energy, but giving her as many opportunities as you can in a safe way. But sometimes, I mean, here's my philosophy is that you can't protect people from themselves too often or too much, or they won't learn those lessons. And if people had protected me too much, if they hadn't mentored me and given me the room to learn, I probably wouldn't have the same respect. I probably wouldn't be as successful in my relationships with my colleagues and the places that I've worked in the past. So, I mean, it is challenging. I typically don't hire the people that scare me. Yeah. But I'm certainly open to hiring people who are going to challenge me in ways that I probably wouldn't have expected. And I'd see that 26, 24-year-old, and first I'd say, bravo. I'd say, I'm sorry about all the student loan debt. I hope you got a graduate school loan because I'm still paying for mine. Yeah. But, you know, I'm going to find a way for them to have some creative autonomy. I'm not going to quash it, but, you know, I'm going to have to make a judgment call one way or another. I don't know if that answers your question or not.
I think it does. I think it does, but I think a lot of, well, I don't know for sure, but I'm guessing that there's a few of our listeners that, mm-hmm. They're older than you and I are, and they're in an executive director role. Mm-hmm. And that 26 to 28-year-old wants their job. What do you say to them? What do you say to either of them? So if you were enlisted to sort of facilitate a meaningful conversation between the baby boomer who is not anywhere close to being ready to retire, has no reason to, perfectly good health, and that 26 to 28-year-old who's recently graduated with an MBA and thinks that she can take on the world, what are you saying to the two of them?
So are they already hired? I should probably ask. Is she there?
Oh, yeah, they work together. Yep, they're both on the payroll. Yep. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to hire an executive coach for both of them if I can, if I have that kind of a budget.
Yeah.
Or else they're going to have to work it out. They're going to have to duke it out because that is, I mean, we want to protect people's feelings. We want people to have a good experience in the workplace, but sometimes having that challenging experience in the workplace is what is going to open that door to people to want to learn how to do it better. And if I hadn't banged my head on a few walls, I probably wouldn't. I mean, you have to have some of those embarrassing lessons. And I'm sure I was that 26-year-old that figured out that that person who, you know, I'm not saying I slept under a lot of desks because I was bored, but I have, you know, at some point in my early 20s while I was waiting for my opportunity. But having people around me who were doing it well and who were teaching me how to take initiative, having those models of behavior around me, but just those professionals, those mentors who were willing to take me under their wing and take that energy and help me focus it, that was such an important part of my experience. So my hope is that I could provide that for them. You know, and I don't want to scare your 26-year-old listeners or your 28-year-old listeners, but at some point you do have to have a conversation about coaching them into the right position or coaching them into the right organization so that you can have that, you know, that maximum, I don't know, ability to be happy when you go to work every day, because not every job is made for everyone at every time in history. So it's a complicated question. I don't think there's a simple answer. I think everybody just, it comes down to having that hard conversation and hoping that everyone's prepared, but giving them the tools.
I don't know if either of them, some of the language that you're describing, using to describe, to sort of imagine this reality that's probably relatively close to the reality that's playing out in some of our nonprofit organizations, are either of them particularly aware of sort of the messiness that sort of exists in the tension that they're both sort of experiencing in their own sort of unique, I think the 26 to 28-year-old, for example, did her MBA program, in such a format where it convinced her or him, doesn't this have to be a her, that things could be relatively predictable and sort of linear and well planned out. And I think the boomer who has no need to retire, but feels pressure from her board or from this young person, knows that it's not linear and predictable and that, are you sort of following my line of thinking here?
Yeah. So maybe they're not all entirely aware of the mess that they're creating by naturally being who they are and feeling the feelings they're feeling.
Or is it that they haven't developed a comfort level of just being in the messiness? Mm-hmm. Like, do they know how to go? Do these two people know how to go sit down at a local diner and actually have a conversation? We have more diners up here in Pennsylvania than you probably do down there.
Right.
But can they just go and just like duke it out over a lunch table over the fact that they, you know, tick each other off? And then go back to the office and be like complete rock stars because they just like trudged through that messiness.
Yeah. So I love you, but no. No. So you have to take into consideration. So your generational biases are showing. I think mine are too.
Yeah.
And I've in listening to the podcast, I've heard that why can't we have coffee? Are you going to take people to lunch? And my authentic self, which is very much what you're going to be experiencing with that 28, 26-year-old person, is going to be, you know, I don't have necessarily a personal relationship with them. So it may not be that a diner or a coffee place is the best place to have that conversation. It may actually be having that uncomfortable conversation in the workspace, you know, where is it comfortable? And, you know, here's another thing too. There's nothing wrong with, and maybe I might be the wrong person for this topic, and if so, I'm so sorry. But
there's no wrong. This is not supposed to be scripted. So have fun with it.
There is a great question that I think, you know, I hate to use this word, but pops the pimple that might grace you out. It may be something you're fascinated with. Showing your vulnerability, if you're the leader in the situation, sitting a person down and saying, we need to have an uncomfortable conversation about whatever that is. And I use that, and I learned that from a friend who was going into business for herself, and I needed help, believe it or not, in organizing a kitchen because I felt like I'd been out of my depth for years, and I was tired of destroying things because I couldn't find things. And having her logic was really helpful for me, but then it came down to how do you ask your friend for money? And she sent that to me in a message and just a quick email. She says, oh, and may we have an uncomfortable conversation about money? I've used that in conversation with people, with everyone, really. I mean, in relationships, but also in the workplace, with some of my younger employees. And I say that because I'm closer to, but can we have that uncomfortable conversation about what's going on here? And then it's kind of the reach out to you, reach to me, because if you think about, I mean, I want to know that I can have this conversation in a place where the younger individual and the older individual are comfortable. And I want to be mindful of the fact that that may not be at a diner. Now, there's nothing wrong with doing the diner. You'll have plenty of people that are okay with that.
Okay.
But you have to go back to that agreement. Where can we have that conversation? But there's absolutely nothing wrong with having that conversation and admitting up front that it's going to be awkward as hell, because it really is. There is just no way around the discomfort. So be comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Okay. There was a comment you made at the very beginning. See, I get the benefit of going back and listening to all this. There was a point, that you acknowledged that it may be you and mine and yours sort of Gen X nature about us that is more comfortable in that diner than the millennial and the boomer. Is that right? Is that what you were suggesting?
Yes.
Yeah, that's explain what I'm suggesting. That to me. Yeah.
Because when you have those two people, and you have to think about the power dynamic, who do you think is paying for that meal? Who do you think is going to offer to pay for that coffee?
Right.
And who's going to have the money to be able to afford it? You know, we have that younger generation who's hearing from the older generation that the reason why you can't afford a house right now is because you're buying too many Starbucks drinks without... You know, and I say this because this is my parents and I'm going to see them in a couple of days at Thanksgiving and I'm going to be living this reality. You know, the reason why your student loans aren't paid off is because you like this latte. You know, we're not going to have that conversation, but you have to, I mean, you have to be mindful of those things, which is why I would really encourage people, if you have access to an HR department or HR professional or somebody else that you trust inside the organization, that you can have a practice conversation with. And maybe ask them for their feedback. I mean, there are resources out there everywhere. It's just teaching our people to be mindful that they can go find them for themselves if they don't have access to them. But yeah, it is. It's kind of a power dynamic, but we don't think about that, you know, in some respects, because it's our privilege to be able to afford it at this age in our life.
Yeah.
So it can feel a little bit like a cage, I think. You know, who's driving? Can they escape if they want to? Maybe I have too much empathy. I don't know, but it's something I feel strongly about.
Well, I got to get your insight on this before I let you go, because I've had you for longer than most of our listeners will hold on. But I'm hoping our listeners will hold on for this question. Okay, so let's take the age dynamic out and let's put the gender dynamic in, because I like what you're talking about with the power dynamic. So let's say it's you and me. We're both. We're both Gen Xers. Let's assume that you're in the ED role and I'm the aspiring MBA grad young man who wants your job. What's playing out there?
Okay. So I'm going to say thank you for that question. And I'm going to say that's an entirely different podcast. I think that it's some real.
That's fine. We'll come back. But just give us a nugget.
That's okay.
Give us a nugget of your response to that, and we'll invite you back in January, and we'll unpack that one.
Oh, come on. You're hurting me here. Now, it's one of those things where I have to think about it, because you need to think about both of the individuals and their individual experiences. You need to know a little bit more about them. You need to know who is in exactly what role, how many people are between you. There's just so many different dynamics to take into consideration. But if you're looking for an answer, which is, yes, it's okay for a woman to invite a man for coffee because the power dynamic is different than a man inviting a woman for coffee. I really can't give you an answer. Here's my answer. It's complicated and it requires a lot more.
I think I learned. So I'll share a little bit of my experience and then we'll wrap up. So I worked for an African-American woman in Washington, D.C., who was a little bit older than I am, who I think taught me more in terms of my awareness of the workplace, and certainly strengthened me in terms of my major. It certainly opened up the opportunities for me in terms of major gift work. But it was those, I can still see us, the two of us sitting at a diner, like a Denny's or something in Reading, Pennsylvania, having some meaningful conversations before or after, one of our meetings with a major donor. I think I learned things there about, like what you're talking about, the power dynamics, that I've carried with me for, I mean, that's 15 years ago. I don't think I wanted her job at the time, but I definitely was aspiring to be in her role, you know, somewhere. I was really refining my role as a quote unquote major gifts officer at the time. I was in graduate school, and so she was sort of not where I was at, but but it helped me. I mean, it really did. I think I'm much more aware of sort of what it means to be in these different roles.
Also, I mean, thinking about her legacy, she was probably really interested in imparting her wisdom too. I mean, you're witness to her success, and there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah. Paige, we could really go on for a long time. I have really enjoyed this initial conversation with you.
We should have coffee at a diner someday.
Yes, as I am sure other people have listened and said, hey, I'd like to talk to Paige as well. If somebody is listening and says, hey, I want to reach out to you, to her, how would you suggest that they do that?
I would say LinkedIn is the best way to get me. I'm Paige, P-A-I-G-E, Eubanks Barrow, E-U-B-A-N-K-S hyphen B-A-R-R-O-W. And I'm pretty responsive. I publish through LinkedIn and I read a lot of articles. So that's the best way to catch me. My email address is myfullname@gmail.com.
Thank you, Paige. It's been a pleasure. You are always welcome back. We will certainly get you on the schedule for early next year to talk about those power dynamics and, wow, you got me thinking. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.